Great leaders, have you ever wondered where they come from? I mean, we might be quick to say, well, some leaders are just born that way. And there might be something to that. It seems that some have a greater propensity than others to be leaders, but it seems that most who are leaders came by it by trial and error. They had to learn something along the way. Leadership skills are usually learned. And it comes by training, that there is someone maybe who has learned by trial and error what needs to be taught to teach someone to be a leader. We have a nephew right now that's a Marine, been a Marine for a few months, and is going through some incredible training, going through some survival training right now that I am confident I would not survive. It'd be more than I could endure. And going through just all kinds of training that'll teach him to be a leader among men. It's a training that will stay with him the rest of his life. But you know, you have to have a desire for that kind of training. There has to be a willingness to do what's so uncomfortable. And sometimes we shy away from leadership just because it doesn't come easy for most of us. In years past on the fire department, it was always hard to find leaders, even among the volunteer ranks. Many aspired to wear the lieutenant's pin or captain's bars, but there were few who really understood what it took to lead and what was involved in training and learning how to be a better leader. And too often, those who wanted the rank were not willing to devote the time and the energy to really learning how to be an effective leader. And there were some, it seems, who really understood what was involved in leading, and they would have been good leaders, but they said, no thanks. And I've thought at times they were the smart ones. They understood what was involved. And they knew that being a leader was not easy. There's a story that's true about George H.W. Bush. That would be President 41. And it's made me think a number of times just about leadership. And I would ask you the question, what would you do if somebody really important had confidence in you and called on you to take on a great task? And that was something that happened to President Bush, well, before he was president. At the time, he was actually serving as like an ambassador to China. And he'd been there for some time and was quite content and happy in what he was doing. And one day, when he and Barbara were out on the streets riding their bicycle, a courier came riding up on his bicycle very, very quickly and came to him and said, I have a message for you. It was one of those messages that was folded and closed and said, George Bush, for your eyes only, kind of message. And he opened it immediately. It was a message from the President of the United States. And the message basically said, it was very short, it says, I would like you to become the director of the CIA. That was really about all it said. That was not what Bush was looking to do. That was not in his career path. In fact, he was afraid that that would be a career path ender for him. But he thought about it for a few minutes, and he scribbled a note back on the same page and gave it back to the courier and sent it back. And he said, if this is what the president wants me to do, then my answer is a resounding yes. He was a leader. And he was willing to take and accept responsibility that was given to him. And he knew it was a job that he could do, not necessarily what he wanted at the moment, but he was willing to do. Leaders, where do they come from? Well, they come from folks just like you and me, just kind of regular folks that are willing to stand up and take responsibility and do jobs that need to be done, work that needs to be done. And for us, what we are most concerned about is just standing up and being a child of God. Just being a Christian. Being the people of God and identified just that way. In life, there are times where we all need to be a leader of some type and in some way, where we have to take a stand for what is right and to do what God wants us to do. Moses was a man called to leadership. But when Moses was first called to be a leader, and he was called by someone very important, he was not so inclined to be the leader that God wanted him to be. When you think about Moses in Exodus chapter 3, and you might be turning that way, we find a man who was a shepherd and seems to be quite content in being a shepherd. He'd been doing that for 40 years, and there's nothing in the text that would make me think that he was looking at doing or being anything different than being a shepherd. And then he received a call that was just most unusual. No doubt a call that got his attention. It came from a burning bush of all things. As he was tending sheep at the foot of Mount Sinai, interesting, the location is Mount Sinai. He would be there again in time, you know. And it was there at the foot of Mount Sinai that God spoke to him. Exodus 3, verse 2. There the angel of the Lord appeared to him in flames of fire from within a bush. Moses saw that though the bush was on fire, it did not burn up. And so Moses thought, I will go over and see this strange sight, why the bush does not burn up. When the Lord saw that he had gone over to look, God called to him from within the bush, Moses, Moses. And Moses said, Here I am. Do not come any closer, God said. Take off your sandals, for the place where you are standing is holy ground. Then he said, I am the God of your father, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob. At this, Moses hid his face because he was afraid to look at God. President Bush received a handwritten letter from the president that got his attention. That was pretty heavy duty. But what Moses experienced was far above that. When we try to imagine the scene in our mind and how it grabbed a hold of Moses and captured his attention and pulled him in close. And he knew and he understood that in fact that he was in the presence of God and he fell on his face. It was not that Moses was cowardly that caused him to hide his face, but he knew that he was in the presence of God. God, who had appeared before and spoken before to the patriarchs, to Abraham, to Jacob, and Isaac, now speaking to Moses. That tells you something very special was about to happen. It tells you something about the place of Moses in the eyes of God. Moses was in a very elite group now, one that would soon carry incredible responsibility. God saw something in Moses that he didn't see in himself. God saw in Moses qualities that were important. God could surely see and understand the heart of Moses. God was not setting Moses up for failure, but instead deemed Moses to have the faith required to do the task that was at hand. Moses didn't see that in himself. He didn't understand what was going to need to be done, but God did, and God chose Moses to do that. Moses could do the work that Jehovah God needed accomplished, and indeed it was serious work. Verse 7, the Lord said, I have indeed seen the misery of my people in Egypt. I have heard them crying out because of their slave drivers, and I am concerned about their suffering. So I have come down to rescue them from the hand of the Egyptians and to bring them up out of that land into a good and spacious land, a land flowing with milk and honey. The home of the Canaanites and the Hittites and the Amorites and the Perizzites, the Hivites and the Jebusites. And now the cry of the Israelites have reached me. And I have seen the way the Egyptians are oppressing them. So now I am sending you to Pharaoh to bring my people, the Israelites, out of Egypt. Can you imagine what Moses is thinking? Can you imagine how he feels at this moment? To think about the task that God is setting before him right now. We see in this God's compassion for his people. It's an interesting point, I think, to just kind of draw out of the passage. God's mercy is always there. And for his people right now, he heard their cries. He is going to deal with their needs. His mercy is overflowing. His mercy was in action right here. And he was sending Moses to help them. But there was this problem. Moses didn't really have the confidence that he needed. Maybe it was a faith problem. I don't question that Moses was a man of faith, but this was a point in time where his faith at this time wasn't what it needed to be, because here God had said, stand up, I've got something for you to do. And Moses is about to say, no, I don't think I want to do that. I don't think I can. But God has said that he could. Like most of us, faith has to grow. Faith is something that has to develop within us. Faith is something that has to become enlarged within us. It's a process that comes over time. And we grow with greater faith based on the words of God. And Moses would have to grow in faith. And God would provide the means for that to happen, for that to take place, a direct avenue of communication with God. It would be God's words that would help Moses to grow. God's word would move him to do and to say some things that he could not ever have imagined that he would do. Because in a short period of time, Moses would stand before Pharaoh, the one keeping the Israelites enslaved. And Moses was going to announce to Pharaoh the plagues, and when they would begin, and even when they would end, when he would pray to God. It was Moses who would call upon Jehovah God with regard to the plagues to bring them and to have them to end. It was Moses who was going to lead the children of Israel through the parted waters of the Red Sea, if we can even imagine that. It was Moses who was going to stand in the very presence of God at Mount Sinai and receive the tablets of law. These were the things that Moses was going to do, but he could have never envisioned where he was going and what he was going to be doing. Or even the faith that would be required for these things to take place. But right now, Moses is struggling. Right now, at this laying prostrate before this burning bush, God is speaking to him. Moses is struggling with what God has to say to him. Verse 11. And Moses said to God, "Who am I that I should go to Pharaoh and bring the Israelites out of Egypt?" And God said to him, "I will be with you, and this will be the sign to you that it is I who have sent you. When you have brought the people out of Egypt, you will worship God on this mountain." And Moses said to God, "Well, suppose I go to the Israelites and say to them, 'The God of your fathers has sent me to you,' and they ask me, 'What is his name?' What should I tell them?" God said to Moses, "I am who I am. This is what you are to say to the Israelites. I am has sent me to you." God also said to Moses, "Say to the Israelites, 'The Lord, the God of your fathers, the God of Abraham, the God of Isaac, and the God of Jacob has sent me to you. This is my name forever, the name by which I am to be remembered from generation to generation.'" It's as though God is saying to Moses, "I am the eternal God. That's who you say. That's who is sending you. The God that their fathers knew. The God that they need to know. That is who is sending you." His relationship with God would become so much more closer as time would go on, as his faith would grow, and as God's promises to him came true one right after another. He would grow closer to God. His faith would grow. And while he struggled for a while with the responsibility that was placed upon him, by faith, he would obey God. By faith, Moses was well demonstrated, some have said. In Hebrews chapter 11, you might look with me to Hebrews chapter 11. Remember what the writer says about Moses. It says as much about Moses or more than anyone else in this great hall of faith. In Hebrews 11 and verse 27, we step in the middle part of the story about Moses when it says, "By faith he forsook Egypt, not fearing the wrath of the king, for he endured as seeing him who is invisible. By faith he kept the Passover and the sprinkling of the blood, lest he who destroyed the firstborn should touch them. By faith they passed through the Red Sea as by dry land, whereas the Egyptians, attempting to do so, were drowned." The point is that Moses had faith, and the point being that Moses obeyed. Moses would do what God said for him to do. And with that in mind, with those thoughts in mind about Moses, let's make some observations about the growing faith of Moses and how we see a change in him. And how he grows so much in his faith to the Lord. And there's some applications we can make. We go back to Exodus, and we turn a few pages from where we were to chapter 32. Oh, there's been a lot of events that have taken place by this time. The plagues are past. They have had the Passover. They have made their way across the desert and the Red Sea. God has been with them all the way. It's been Moses who's been in front. It's Moses who has been the leader of these people. There's no question that Moses had developed an incredibly close relationship with God. He was with God on that holy mountain at this time when God told Moses about the sins of Israel down below. What had happened in the absence of Moses? They had built a golden calf. It's hard to believe that just 40 days before they had said to the Lord through Moses that, yes, we will obey, we will do everything that God commands. They were willing then to obey, but in just a short time, oh, how some things have changed. Moses there at the feet of God on the holy mountain, the people below have built a golden calf. God is saying, here's what you're going to find when you go back. I'm not sure Moses fully understood or believed even what he was going to see. We have to think about the disappointment of God, knowing that his people have so quickly left him. They have forgotten him. They've become so sinful in such a short period of time. And God is so angry. So angry, in fact, that he's ready to destroy them all. But Moses did not want his people to be destroyed. He didn't want that to happen. So he pleaded with God for his brethren, a prayer on behalf of Israel. And that's what we see in chapter 34. A prayer from a man who was not eloquent of speech, he said. Slow of speech in chapter 4. This is what Moses thought of himself. This is how he described himself. I'm not eloquent of speech. I can't say the things that you would want me to say, Lord. I'm slow of speech. And yet here he is, the one who is praying on behalf of the people. Chapter 32, verse 11. But Moses sought the favor of the Lord his God. O Lord, he said, why should your anger burn against your people whom you brought out of Egypt with great power and a mighty hand? Why should the Egyptians say it was with evil intent that he brought them out to kill them in the mountains and to wipe them off the face of the earth? Turn from your fierce anger, relent, and do not bring disaster on your people. Remember your servants, Abraham, Isaac, and Israel, to whom you swore by your own self, I will make your descendants as numerous as the stars in the sky. I will give your descendants all this land I promised them, and it will be their inheritance forever. Then the Lord relented and did not bring on his people the disaster that he had threatened. Now it's the boldness of Moses, the confidence of Moses to be able to talk with God in this way, to pray to him in this way. At this point in time, there have been numerous occasions where God has spoken to Moses, and Moses has spoken with God and has prayed to him. Their relationship was so much closer now. And Moses knew and understood something about the greatness and the power of God. And this relationship had become very personal. And he was confident enough to approach God about this very difficult matter, a closeness that is evident in his prayer. And not only had that he grown closer to God, but he had grown as the leader of Israel. I guess maybe the question for us would be, do we have that same kind of closeness? Are we that close to God that we can petition him, that we can make known our cares and our concerns, our petitions to him? Prayer is an interesting indicator of our relationship with God. Moses would pray many times to God. And any time we see that, we know something about their relationship. It becomes so clear and so evident to us. It seems that those who are closest to God can confide the best to him in prayer. Whether that's Moses or King David or the early Christians, prayer is essential in our relationship with God. And if we are going to be a leader among men, prayer is essential. David prayed, hear my cry, O God, attend to my prayer, in the 61st Psalm. And we can see something about the confidence that David had as he approached God in prayer. When Peter was in prison in the 12th chapter of the book of Acts, it was angel of God that came and loosed him. I think Peter thought he was seeing a vision. There was a time there where he didn't really believe that he was being broken out of prison, that was really happening, but soon when the angel left and Peter was outside the prison walls, he knew indeed that this had been by the hand of God that it happened. And so he went quickly to where the disciples were meeting. The disciples were together and they were praying together. Isn't that interesting? Interesting to think that they were praying on behalf of Peter. As the text would say, many were gathered together praying in Acts chapter 12 and verse 2 because of Peter being in prison and that he was loosed. We learn again something about the power of prayer, and we learn something about disciples of God praying. And it was James who wrote, "The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much," in James chapter 5. Yeah, we need to be a people of prayer. Moses understood the power of that and the connection that it made with God. We must see and understand that too. Following the lead of Moses and his relationship with God becomes so evident by his prayers, we can learn something right here from Moses. Are we praying? Are we the praying people that we need to be? And if our relationship with God is not as strong as it should be, is it a lack of prayer? Is that the problem? Is that our weakness? If we're going to stand up and be the people of God and be leaders among men as the people of God, prayer is a very important element in that relationship. There's something else we can learn about Moses in the text. He took another great step in leadership. When Moses came off of the mountain, he found exactly what God had warned him about. The people had become exceedingly wicked. And when he saw them worshiping that golden calf, it was more than Moses could handle. And he threw down the tablets of stone that he had just brought from the hand of God. And you think about that, the breaking of those tablets was quite symbolic, really, of what Israel had done. They had broken the covenant. Someone said one time, God broke his covenant with the people. No, I think the people had broken their covenant with God. And the breaking of those tablets was kind of symbolic of the fact that the covenant had been broken. This was the same people who had said, "We will do everything that the Lord commands." And they had forgotten him already. The covenant was no more. And Moses took a stand against the people. He took a stand against the people who had rejected God, and there would be no doubt whose side Moses was on. And when he approached Aaron, Aaron's excuses for the people and for his own actions, it went nowhere with Moses. There was no excuse that Aaron could make that in any way would be acceptable to God. And the very idea as Aaron tried to talk it off, that this threw this gold into the fire and out came this golden calf, was just ridiculous, and Moses knew every bit of that. Aaron had proven himself to not be a leader. Aaron had proven himself to simply be a follower. He had proven himself that he was just a follower and not a leader, and that someone needed to stand up. And it wasn't going to be Aaron. But Moses would stand up. Moses took a stand, chapter 32 and verse 25. Chapter 32 and verse 25. Moses saw that the people were running wild and that Aaron had let them get out of control and so became a laughingstock to their enemies. So he stood at the entrance to the camp and said, "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me." And all the Levites rallied to him. Then he said to them, "This is what the Lord, the God of Israel, says, each man strap a sword to his side and go back and forth through the camp from one end to the other, killing his brother and his friend and his neighbor." And the Levites did as Moses commanded. And that day about 3,000 of the people died. Moses took a stand. And there was no question whose side Moses were on. And there were others who had to take a stand that day. I mean, the words of Moses were just so incredible and so strong. "Whoever is for the Lord, come to me," he said. What would we choose? I mean, it's hard to place ourselves in that time and in that event, but I just wonder, what would we choose? Would we be able to make a stand like that? I'm serious. What would we choose? Even today, have we made a choice to stand with God? Who is for the Lord? That's the question. And we are the only ones that can answer for ourselves. Who is for the Lord? We have to choose if we are going to live. We cannot separate that life. That is real life, life that matters. We cannot separate that when it comes to a decision to walk with God. Because choosing to walk with God is a decision of life or death. It is that. Moses, in his last days, spoke to Israel. Hold your finger here for a moment and go to Deuteronomy chapter 30. Deuteronomy chapter 30, beginning at verse 19. Deuteronomy 30, beginning at verse 19. Moses, in his last days on earth, has some of the final warnings here for the children of Israel, teaching for them. This day I call heaven and earth as witness against you, that I have set before you life and death, blessings and curses. Now choose life, so that you and your children may live, and hold fast to Him. For the Lord is your life, and He will give you many years in the land He swore to give your fathers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. Think about what Moses is saying to the people. Choose and live, he says. We cannot separate that life, real life, life that matters. We cannot separate that from God. Listen to God. Hold to Him. He is your life. When are we going to see that? It seems the children of Israel struggled to see that. Sometimes we struggle to see that too. There are lessons from Moses that we need to get a hold of. Even in our day, in our time, we need leaders to stand up and lead. As Christians, we have to be a people that will stand up and stand out from the crowd, that we look different from the crowd. Who will be on the Lord's side? That's what Moses was asking. And even today, from among our own people, God has placed in the church certain needs. The needs of church leaders that will stand up and lead. Men who are willing to prepare themselves to serve as elders and shepherds of the flock. And it's not preparation that takes place when you become elderly, when you become older. It's preparation that takes place when you're young. It's preparation that has to happen when you still have your children at home, when you can influence them, when you can be the leader of your family. That's when you prepare to be an elder, a leader, a shepherd in the Lord's church. Who's on the Lord's side? Who's going to lead? The Lord has placed in the home a need for leadership. We need husbands and fathers who will set the course in their homes. Fathers who are willing to stand up and to say, this is what we are going to do. We are going to serve the Lord and lead by the Word of God. Men who make an impression on their families that is without question that God is being followed in this home. And that there are rules that are set by God, even, that are adhered to, where commitment to godly service is most important, where it's never a question of, are we going to worship God today on the Lord's Day? It's just known. That's a given. Avoidable obstacles are moved out of the way because when the saints meet, we are going to be there. When there's Bible study, we will be there. And there's Bible study and readings in the home that takes place to form the minds of our children in such a way, fathers that will lead, husbands that will be godly husbands in the home. God has placed a need in the world for servants of God who will stand out and be different and look different than the world. Servants of the Lord who have truly decided to be on the Lord's side. And that's what Moses was saying. That was the question of Moses to the children of Israel. Whoever's on the Lord's side, come to me. And it's a decision that we should make and make it in such a way that people who know us, people who work with us, our neighbors, they know whose side we are on. Look with me to Joshua chapter 24. Joshua chapter 24. We know the passage. It's familiar to us. In Joshua chapter 24, we make the point so often about Joshua being just a leader in his home, but it goes beyond that. It's about Joshua being a leader among men. And the aspect of being a leader in his home was just one aspect of that. Joshua 24, verse 14, "Now fear the Lord and serve him with all faithfulness. Throw away the gods of your fathers, worship beyond the river and in Egypt, and serve the Lord. But if serving the Lord seems undesirable to you, then choose for yourselves this day whom you will serve, whether the gods of your fathers served beyond the river, or the gods of the Amorites in whose land you are living. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord." All of us have to make that choice. All of us must be servants in that way. And Moses, as he grew in leadership among people, among men, that became more and more evident. There's one other point I want to make quickly. From Exodus chapter 33, going back to our text. Exodus chapter 33. Moses continues to grow in his closeness, in his relationship with the Lord. And as we have noted already, he had a very special relationship with the Lord. Moses is saying to the Lord in the text, "How will I know your plans? Who are you sending to me?" We're looking at chapter 33, verse 12, beginning. "Moses said to the Lord, 'You have been telling me, lead these people, but you have not let me know whom you will send with me. You have said, I know you by name, and you have found favor with me. If you are pleased with me, teach me your ways so I may know and continue to find favor with you. Remember that this nation is your people.' And the Lord replied, 'My presence will go with you, and I will give you rest.'" I think in some ways it's hard for us to fully understand the depth of the relationship between God and Moses. I'm not sure it's sometimes that Moses fully appreciated that relationship and what it was. But when God said to Moses, "I will go with you," I find that just amazing. And God made his presence known to Moses in such an incredible way. As the text would tell us time and again, no one has seen the face of God, for to see the face of God would bring death. But God allowed Moses to see him in the cleft of the rock as God put his hand over Moses until he passed, and Moses could see the back of God as he went away. What other men have not seen. But Moses saw and was so close to the very presence of God. What an amazing relationship that Moses had with God. That he could converse with him in this way. That he could pray prayers that had so much depth and meaning to them. And God would respond in very real ways. He was close to God, figuratively and physically. And that could not be missed. Chapter 34, verse 29. Moses again has been to the top of Sinai in the very presence of God. Chapter 34, verse 29. "When Moses came down from Mount Sinai with the two tablets of the testimony in his hands, he was not aware that his face was radiant because he had spoken with God. And when Moses and the Israelites saw Moses, his face was radiant, and they were afraid to come near him. But Moses called to them. So Aaron and all the leaders of the community came back to him, and he spoke to them. And afterward, all the Israelites came near him, and he gave them all the commands the Lord had given him on Mount Sinai. When Moses finished speaking to them, he put a veil over his face. But whenever he entered the Lord's presence to speak with him, he removed the veil until he came out. And when he came out, he told the Israelites what he had commanded, had been commanded. Then saw that his face was radiant. Then Moses would put the veil back over his face until he went again in to speak to the Lord." That's another one of those scenes that's kind of hard for me to understand and picture. That he was so close to the Lord that it even affected his appearance. That he became radiant, I suppose, even as the Lord was radiant. And it says something again to us, something about the relationship of God and Moses. When we study the life of Moses, we know and we understand that he was close to God, and we can see some very special aspects of that relationship. But the point that we need to think about and understand is that we should have a relationship with God, that we are so close to him that people can see God in us. I think that's the idea of what's being said here. That's the idea of when Moses would come down off of the mountain and his face was shining as the sun, and Aaron and the priest and others could see that, they knew that Moses had been in the presence of God. And it couldn't be missed. There was no doubt and there was no argument about that. I would wish that people would know and would see in us that we have been in the presence of God. I know not in a physical way, not in a physical sense, but in every other sense, we have been in the presence of God. When we know and when we see, when we study his word, when he speaks to us that way, we know the will of God and we are very much in his presence. And even as we gather together in worship, do we not understand that God is with us? The apostles time and again had to struggle with persecution and fear of men. And there were those who did not appreciate at all what was being preached by the apostles, to the point that they would be held and beaten and imprisoned at times. In Acts, the fourth chapter, it's an interesting read to me that Peter and John, when they were taken captive and they were finally let go, that there was never an argument that could be made that these were not the men of God. And in verse 14 in particular, it says, "Now when they saw the boldness of Peter and John, and perceived that they were uneducated and untrained men, they marveled. And they realized that they had been with Jesus." It was undeniable. Jesus had rubbed off on them in every way. And I would want people to know and to see that in us. That when we are with our friends and when we are at work, when we are in the community, we stand out in such a way that people know that we have been with Jesus, that we have been with God. Can we learn that from the text? From Moses, can we learn that? There was no doubt and there was no question. The Apostle Paul, who seemingly had to struggle so much to come to a point of understanding that he needed to be this man of God that God wanted him to be. When he was converted, there was no doubt, there was no question that he was a man of God because he had absolutely and fully put him on. And he said in Galatians chapter 2 and verse 20, "I have been crucified with Christ. It is no longer I who live, but Christ lives in me. And the life which I now live in the flesh, I live by faith in the Son of God who loved me and gave himself for me." And when we read about the life of the Apostle Paul, we would have no question, we would have no doubt that it was indeed Christ living in him. And that's what men need to see in us. There are lessons to be learned from Moses and from others who have stood with God. And let's hope and let's pray and let's be the people of God in such a way that God is seen in us. Can we learn that from the lesson? But it comes with some decisions. I mean, even as God said to Moses, "I have a job for you. Here's something I want you to do." And Moses was not so confident to do that. Sometimes we're that way too. Sometimes we know what we need to do to be the people of God. Is it a lack of confidence? Is it just rebellion? What holds us back sometimes from being the people of God? I can't always answer that. But I know that when we set our mind to it and we choose to be God's people, that he will bless us, that he will help us, that he will guide us in being the people that he would be. He has always done that. Moses becomes a prime example of that. And I hope we learn that. And that when God calls us, that we do not hesitate to respond. But in fact, God has always been calling man. He has always been calling for followers. And Jesus, before he left this earth, said and continues to say, "Come to me, all you who labor and are heavy laden, and I will give you rest. Take my yoke upon you and learn from me, for I am gentle and lowly in heart, and you will find rest for your souls, for my yoke is easy and my burden is light." And he's still calling. He's still calling if we will just respond. And even today, if there are those who need to become baptized believers and put on Christ, there's no reason to delay if you're willing to submit to him. And if you are a Christian, but you have stepped outside of Christ, he's still calling if you'll repent, if you'll pray forgiveness. Can we help you? Would you come? Would you respond as we stand and sing?